This is CliffCentral.com.
Sanbonani Nonke, welcome to the show. It is, frankly speaking, 1 hour of very interesting issues and conversations. Dumelang Rorsang.
Sure, Pichak.
How are you doing?
Shapuzit.
I'm glad you had your pajamas today. It was actually disappointing and disrespectful to not only me, but our listeners as well, that you're out of your pajamas for heaven's sakes.
I am decolonized.
You see that. Oh.
Pajamas are a colonial construct.
Let's not go there. Listen, we have a really interesting show lined up for you today. often we look at leaders like Branson, Jobs, bankers and all sorts of things. And we think that's leadership and that style of leadership is the right style of leadership. And we often confuse that with other styles of leadership. Guy that I've been following for a long time, because obviously I did sports for a long time at 702 and ETV and watched the rise of a very interesting man, a coach of a PSL team. In the beginning, it was... You were based in Cape Town, so there was lots of Cape Town coaching going on there. I think even at one stage, your old team that you used to play for.
Yeah, I coached them. Yeah.
And you coached Motherland as well. Motherland, City.
No, I didn't coach
you
Mother
didn't
City.
Coach City.
No, only Hellenic Football Club.
Hellenic, yeah. in Cape Town.
Yes.
And then you moved down to...
I coached Seven Stars, which was Ajax Amsterdam.
There we go.
Cape Town today, before
they changed over.
Yeah, they amalgamated with Cape Town Spurs. Yeah.
And then we came up to... the top side of the
world.
Well,
then you got that famous word in football, you get fired. So your services are no longer required.
We're speaking to none other than Coach of the Year 2016-17.
Four times Coach of the Year, is it? Five times that you've been Coach of the Year.
And every time, you know, Rory, it's funny, when you're an analyst in sport, you have to watch those conferences and those media events and those award ceremonies very closely. Every single time that I have watched an award ceremony for Coach of the Year and PSL Teams of the Year and Player of the Year and Golden Boot of the Year, Gavin Hunt says the same thing. He's like, guys, but who's the judges here? Like, really, because when it's like Golden Boot of the Year, it's fine. You know, it's like you scored 37 goals and that's cool, you know. But when it's Coach of the Year, who's judging that? You know, The man is as humble as anything. And I must say, interviewing you then and now, I've seen that. So I'm very excited and pleased to welcome Gavin Hunt. I admire you, dude. You're an inspiration.
Thanks, man.
I think there's the interesting thing about Gavin for me is he takes clubs that are not your big three, big brand clubs, clubs that aren't necessarily even well-funded, and somehow turns them into championship teams.
He took
right?
my club somewhere.
Which club was that?
Morocco Swallows. He took my club somewhere.
That's a real sore point in my life.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
5 years.
It needs to be saved. It looks like so. I mean, has coached Seven Stars, Black Leopards, Supersport United, Morocco Swallows, and now Bidvest Wits. Coach, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So Gavin, tell us a bit about where did you learn? So you used to play soccer. You used to be a footballer, and then you became coach. How did you transition from that to in one instance you are driving your own performance to be the best soccer player, and now you have to get the best performance out of others? Did you go to school or was that just a natural thing?
Go to school. I had the best 3 years of my life in Standard 8.
those are good years for you.
Yeah, those are three good years. I passed my trick with an F. Those days you needed 39%. So I was not going to be no academic. I was going to be no varsity graduate. I always found that even when I played, I was captain of the teams. And, you know, I started coaching when I was still playing. I started coaching a schoolboy side for extra money. You know, you take them in the afternoons. And I started to do that. And I found I actually quite enjoyed it. I was still playing then, obviously, as a professional.
How old were you at that time?
I was in my early 20s. You know, I was coaching, you know, some parent asked me, oh, can you take our kids' school under 12 team? And I took them and I enjoyed it and I got them and they improved from that year to the next year and they won games and everybody was happy and blah, blah, blah. So it started, the seed sort of got planted then. I felt like I like to be, what's the word, not motivating, but showing people, motivating, if you want to use it, motivating people and inspiring people. And I seemed to, you know, find that there was a reaction that they'd, you know, they I could get them to do things that maybe out of their comfort zones, you know. Mm. So that's how it all started, and then you go from there. But football's a result business, you know. Results can turn on you in a heartbeat. It doesn't matter who you are. Look at Jose Mourinho. Mm. He wins with Chelsea. The next year they almost get relegated. He gets fired.
Mm.
So I said it earlier, you can take people go from positive to negative very quickly. But to get them from negative back to positive takes ages, weeks, mm-hmm. and months. And so, you know, those type of things take time.
Mm. So let's talk about, I mean, you speak about the move from positive to negative and negative to positive. How does a coach lift a team that has just lost, let's say, 3 matches in a row? Mm. What is
you
it?
You mean
what,
SuperSport
what
United
it,
when
what,
they were
what,
back in the day?
Yeah, yeah. My first five games at SuperSport, you were second bottom.
Exactly, exactly.
The boards came out, the signs came out, the board meetings came
exactly.
out.
Exactly. So what in the world does a coach do?
I've got a belief in what I do and how I do it. I believe it's, obviously as the years go on, you tinker it and change it and tweak it a little bit here and there, but I've got a belief in the way we need to do things. I'll always stick by my beliefs, and I'll never get excited when we win, and I never get excited when we lose. Mm. I'll always try and be pretty calm.
But how do you lift the team? The team is looking
just,
at you
I'm
and
trying to get there.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
See, it takes time, eh?
See what he just did there? He coached you, eh? He coached you.
Yeah. You've got to get the group of people that you're working with to buy into this, what's this word, philosophy or way of thinking or... whereby it's less effort, higher risk, you know, less risk, high rewards type of situation. Whereby, you know, if we put it in now, we will gain in the long run. You know, those type. So I think it's you'll generally see generally with me wherever I've been. It takes a little bit of time, but there's always improvement wherever I've been. Mm. The first 5-6 games were poor, shocking. Well, the first season, we won the league, you know, we're not too good, and then we'll get better and better and better and better because I believe in the way to do things, you know, yeah. So I look for, what do I look for in people? I look for good characters. That's key. So maybe less ability sometimes, mm-hmm. but better character people.
What does that look like? So characters is...
Characters is the attitude thing. Mm. It's something that you don't have to stick your foot up his backside every day and push him, where he'll do it on his own. So if you... You'll come into a room of people and you'll say, right, we want to do this, this, and this, and you'll see an attitude of somebody the way he does it and the way the next guy does it. But the guy who does it very badly is a guy with better, more ability than the guy who does it very well.
Mm.
So it's a hardware and software type of call. So a mental approach and the physical approach. And I always say, give me a guy with less ability, but maybe his mental approach is right and he'll go for you a little bit more than the guy with huge ability, but he's... He gives up and he doesn't work hard enough.
Mm.
Those guys, get rid of them. I get rid of those ones. And because you'll waste your time and it'll drain your effort, your energy out of the team. So I'm making all this whole big thing, but it's a very simple exercise. Mm. I could tell you in a heartbeat about somebody's attitude.
Mm.
I'm quite a good judge of attitudes.
Coach,
not a good judge of women.
Coach, tell me, you know, let's go back a little bit to the beginning days of coaching. Now, you've got a reputation now, right? So if you move clubs now, and hopefully you stay with Wits for a little longer, maybe go back to Morocco Swallows, you know, I want you there. But you go when you were younger and you started out your coaching career, no one knows you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some people might
just
have
like
known
anybody.
You as a sportsman, but hardly anyone knows you. How do you gain that... confidence.
Results. Results will always... Forget about everything else. Results at the end of the day is what it's all about. And if you get a few results, then people look, say, maybe he's not doing a bad job. Even though, you know, he might be doing a bad job because he's got very good players and he should be doing better.
Mm.
So there's a fine line between all that type of stuff. But how you handle a team, how you put on training sessions. I mean, I started coaching. I coached all purely... what I've learned from my previous coaches.
Mm.
Let's say I started. And,
and
I have a little bit of insight into the game. Then after a good few years, I thought, no, I need to know a little bit more here.
Right, so you need some formal training.
Yeah, I need some formal training. So that's when I went and got my licenses done, my qualifications, and I went overseas and did that. And then I really had a better insight into why we do certain things or why things are not happening or why. And problem solving. You know, if you've got a crisis situation in a certain situation, what can we do to get us out of that situation in a low results column wise, you know, in terms of losing games where we can still, like you said, you've lost three games, what do we do now? Well, let's go lower risk. We do certain things, you know.
What's the difference between a winning coach and a coach that just doesn't? What have you seen as
players?
The things that,
The bottom line is good. The people say, oh, he's a good coach. I always say, take Mourinho, Pep Guardiola, take all those guys, put them at Sunderland, at Hull City, Crystal Palace. Where would they be?
But someone
they might improve the teams, but they'll never win what they've won. Because they haven't got the players.
But someone would challenge you on that based on your own record, because you have managed to take.
But the point I'm trying to say is, they will. Good coaches will make good teams 20% better. Bad coaches will make them massively won't go anywhere. The teams will stay the same. So, you know, it's about players playing the right way, doing the right things in the certain areas. And people say to me, "So, what's your plan?" I said, "I don't have a plan."
Now that's interesting.
I don't have a plan. Mm-hmm. I'll go into a job and I don't have a plan.
Why? Okay. What's
the because story there? I go from my eye, my feel, my gut, those things, those core value things, I still do. So all this modern technology of tracking a player's running and doing no. Modern technology, no. Don't give me all that. My eye will judge, my gut will tell me, my head will tell me, my feel will tell me. It's like walking into a dressing room. I can smell the atmosphere when it's bad, and I'll smell the atmosphere when it's good.
Instinct.
And I will tell you when a player is doing badly, and I'll tell you because my eye will tell me. You don't have to tell me all the stats. So we get a stats guy. Told, no, doing this and this. Took shit. I don't need that.
So let's
so
go.
So my plan is I don't have a plan.
Let's go into the change room at halftime. Yes. We're 2-0 down.
Yes.
And you smell that, you know, things are just not good. The atmosphere is bad.
If
us a team talk.
If we're working hard and we're doing well and we've got conceded two goals from stupid situations, we need one or two changes. If they 2-0 down by lack of effort, because effort you can never.
Give us a team talk. So you've just walked in.
No, you can't.
What do you mean you can't?
Oh, the paint of the walls will come off. No, you can't. You get the vocabulary.
Go ahead. Let's dare you. Give us a team talk.
No, you can't.
Which is the most?
I'm not a big team talk. I'm not a big talker.
Okay.
In terms of before games, so my team talks. The FIFA. We did a study when I went to the FIFA convention. 11 minutes. A person switches off after 11 minutes. So if I talk to you for 11 minutes and tell you this, tell you that, after 11 minutes you switch off. So my first 11 minutes is the most important thing. So my team talks are normally 6 to 7 minutes. Boom, 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 boom.
What do you say?
Well, I'll reiterate what we've done from Monday to Friday. Because your team talk starts on Monday for Saturday's game. So we'll do things at training. And on the training round, we were talking about we're going to press high, we're going to come low, we're going to go wide, we're going to come in, we're going to play narrow, we're going to play wide, we're going to play with three at the back, we're going to change the formation. So I've got a plan for Monday. You say I don't have a plan, but I do have a plan.
Yes.
In terms of...
But you don't have an overarching...
And then we'll practice this, and we'll always practice live situations that's going to come up on Saturday. So I will generally practice, I'll put out a team against us that plays like the opposition. Does that make sense? So we'll practice... I know that team plays that formation. I'll watch the last six games. They haven't changed in six games. They're not going to change this game. So we'll play practice against them, against a shadow team that's going to play against us.
I've always wondered, watching coaches, especially on the sidelines, when we're 2-0 down, the Rory and Andrew team here are 2-0 down, and thinking about it, it must be bloody unbelievably frustrating. Move this, you know, the hands start going, and you see the cameras with it, the frustration on the face.
You've received a few red cards in your time as well.
No red cards at all. Well, you play with the fourth official, don't you? You know the boundary. There's a boundary. It's like your wife.
Yeah.
You push, you know the boundary, and then you back off. There's always a boundary. There's always a limit with a referee and lines. And it's a game. It's a game within a game, isn't it? If you're really derogative or really aggressive with it, then you know you're going to go. Or, you know, it's like when we play in Africa. I want to get sent off. But they won't send you off because they're crooked.
But let's get back to it, Gav. You've got a situation. You're down, right? And... isn't it frustrating? Because you've almost got the bird's eye view of a team. Yes. With, you know, talking about business and leadership lessons,
first thing is you know your team. You know your players. And whatever, I always say, sometimes in football, reverse psychology is the best.
Mm.
And people say, what's that? So when the team is playing shocking and they 2-0 down, you come in and you be calm. Everybody's and you're calm.
Mm.
You just say, John, just go over here. Peter, you push in here. Peter, John, you coming off again like that and walk out. People think, what the fuck's going on here? What's going on here? You know what I'm saying? Where you're 2-0 up and you should be 5-0 up and you I fly into them. Then I absolutely blast them. Then they go, what's he on about now?
Mm.
We're 2-0 up. We're winning the game. So reverse psychology in sport is very, you got to be very careful and to feel it, what the situation is. If they're playing well, but they're losing, or they're playing badly, whatever the situation is. So it's something you can't plan, you can't ever pre-plan that. It's something.
You speak about knowing your players, coach, and a lot of people will be listening to this, you know, leaders in businesses and knowing your players. And how important is it? How well do you
gotta
know
your players? You got to know. It's like if you're selling a product,
mm.
you got to know your product backwards. I know each individual of my players, when he goes for a crap, when he goes and sleeps, how he reacts in situation. Obviously, new ones, I've got to get to know them. So when I get a play in like now, the last week, I'm starting to get to know them.
Well, Dean Furman comes to the club. What are you doing? Like, how are you getting to know him?
How he reacts to situation. Does he like a bollocking? Does he like his arm around him? Does he like, what does he like? And I'll know every single player. So what I'll do is, I'll attack one of our players in the dressing room who's playing the best, and I know responds to a bollocking, I'll hammer him about something when he doesn't need a hammering. And the one that is soft and doesn't like, you know, he can't say anything to him, those ones we need to be careful with him. So all this stuff, it's people, handling product, what you know, it's important, you know. And it's the same as your opposition. Trying to know the opposition, how, and I think it's very important to know your coach, not the team, the opposition coach, how he responds, how he reacts.
Who's the hardest coach to read in South African football right now?
I think every coach has got is hard to read because they all knee-jerk reaction sometimes. They make a decision because of they're losing.
Mm.
They won't make a decision because they're winning. Do you understand?
But so, who do you think is the tough?
The toughest ones always got the best players. Isn't it? Because when they make a change, the player they're bringing on is better than the one they had on.
Yeah.
Yes. So, players, coaches change formations, they change shapes against you, all these type of things. So you've got to be thinking on your feet, you know what I'm saying? So you can't just be, oh, okay, you know.
Coach, how do you sharpen your own skills? So your players are on the field every single week practicing. How do you sharpen your skills?
Well, I sharpen my skills by trying to meet with top coaches that have been there, done that. So the Alex Ferguson's of the world, the Harry Redknapp's of the world, these are people, Louis van Gaal's of the world, I've had one-on-ones, Fabio Capello's of the world, Trapattoni, I've had a meeting with him, chat about football, you know, people like this. So, and the experiences, and there's always a common denominator with all of them. They don't take any shit. They don't stand for, they believe in their principles. Yes, there's got to be freedom of speech or playing stuff, you know, let them play. But there's always a certain guidelines that they put into the team or put into the system that they must be adhered to. So
I'm interested, if you've just joined us, welcome to the show. We're speaking to Coach of the Year, Club of the Year, Players of the Year, everything of the year, about leadership lessons. Gavin Hunt from Bidvest Wits, frankly speaking, leadership lessons from a winning coach here. And we'd love to hear your thoughts as well. Hit us up on WeChat. Give us your thoughts on Twitter as well, @Yebo_Levy or @RoryShabalala. And we'll try and get some of those questions through to Coach as well. Coach, I'm interested now. Arguably, you've done a lot in South Africa. Do you have feelings of wanting to take it to a bigger stage? Or is it a situation of saying, you know what, I'm actually... Because, you know, I think some people jump the gun and that's their mistake. They want to hit the big stage. You know, they want to be Man United's big coach. But they haven't even thought about what the next stage is.
Well, if you take a player and you take a coach, a player can go on trial and they can say, no, he's not good enough. Or yes, he's good enough.
Mm.
A coach can't go on trial. Doesn't matter his CV. Because they can't see him... what he can do and what he can't do. Because CV tells you, he's done this, done that, done that. So a coach is very difficult. So coaching is not what you know, who you know.
Mm.
And somebody's got to know somebody to know somebody to know somebody. That's how coaching works. So to get jobs at a higher level, It's not about how good you are, because you could have be a very good coach. Somebody's got to be connected to know you.
Maybe that's the problem as
that's
well.
That's how it works.
I'm just thinking about my own conscientization here. You see, I'm trying to be a woke human being. Not at a high level, because arguably PSL is as good as any other
level. No, in South Africa. Yeah,
sure.
No, but to be fair, you can earn in dollars and you can...
that's a
and
currency
can
discussion,
have, and you can have...
Let's not go there.
But would you ever... I mean, yes. Not consider, but like...
I think for me, personally... the ultimate is to take a team to the World Cup. That's my goal.
So
let's talk about playing the World Cup
and be a coach for a team in the World Cup. Even if I lost for three games, because you lost three games.
Let's talk about Bafana Bafana, because you know, word on the street is that you helped Stuart Baxter choose the Bafana Bafana squad. Aspirations to coach Bafana Bafana?
Well, let me just correct you. I didn't help him choose. I mean, he phoned me and we speak about players and, you know, I give him my opinion and that's it. And he makes his own decision. What they got is a very good man there now. So, very highly intelligent man, well educated, and he knows football and he's a very good coach. So, you saw with the first game, Nigeria, they won the first time in history away from home. So, he needs a little bit of time. He needs a little bit of patience because he's going to be downturn. But I think they've got a very, very good coach there.
But
so
do you feel there's an injustice that's been done on you? I mean, you've won so many
titles.
I was supposed to be
20. So I went for interviews. I was on the technical committee. What else did I do?
So why in the world are you not getting...
Because obviously the people that bring the coach in felt that I wasn't the right guy.
And why do you think that is? I mean, you look and you're like... You know, you just said that in Africa, in the rest of Africa, they're crooked. Do you think that it's a similar thing here in South Africa around the selection of coaches and so on?
No, I don't say that because I don't know. The selection committee, I don't even actually would know
who sits on the
coach. I don't even know. So for me, you know, I think they've got a good choice. They've made a good choice now, but if it happens, it happens. But I've always said I've got more chance of going to the World Cup with another country than in South Africa.
Why is that?
I don't know. I've got no idea. Maybe somebody doesn't like me there. It's the bottom line.
He's not letting on.
Doesn't like
but
me
Rory,
there.
Rory, you know, doesn't matter. You're putting the guy in a corner. I mean, he's not going to tell you who that person is. He knows who that person is. That person has been in soccer since day dot when Gavin didn't get the job. So we can connect the dots ourselves. He doesn't have to connect them for us.
It doesn't matter.
Don't worry. The presidency is coming up for re-election sometime soon. So hopefully we can get that sorted out. Gavin, working, you know, in slightly different spaces, you've worked in South Africa for a long time. Ever thought of coaching on the continent? Is that something that's of interest to you?
We do live in the best country in Africa. I'm not going to even go there. So if you look at Africa, you're minimizing, there's a lot of places that you don't want to go than places you want to go. You know, North Africa is very, very difficult because it is very different because they only generally employ locals in their leagues. If you look at Central Africa, you're not going to go there because it's very tough conditions and, you know, the leagues aren't really. And there's always problems in Africa with money and payments and, you know, it comes up on a daily basis. And they're chasing coaches and bringing coaches in. For me, it's about certainly, and I've said it, I'll say it again, about going to a World Cup. That's for me. But it's timing. That is timing. It's not about, because you could, the worst thing to do is take a team after the World Cup just finished. So 2018, taking a team now. Then you've got 4 years to try and qualify.
Take
the team as it's just about to go. Or do like Carlos Pereira does. You just take them over when they're the host. So you don't have to qualify. 100%. Yeah, so there's no sweat. You just play friendlies now.
Gavin, you know? let's talk about your ability to lead across cultural and so on divides. When you speak to people that hire people in corporates, they'll say, oh my goodness, the quality of people that we're getting make it difficult. You have the responsibility of coaching not just people who come from this education system, but people who sometimes don't speak the same language that you do and somehow get great performance out of them, who come from a different world that you do. How do you do it? Like, practically, how do you do it?
Well, there's a universal football language. I think that's the first thing you've got to understand. So, if you're doing an exercise, a training, there's a language that says, can I swear?
Yeah.
Get your fucking ass out of here and fucking get moving.
Is that the language?
That's the language. So, if you go to Russia, If you go to Spain, if you go to Holland, if you go to Brazil, if you go to South Africa.
Like, vamos, vamos, vamos. Pero bueno.
Bueno, move your ass. Yeah. So there's a football language, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the first thing. Where the biggest problem is the cultural, if you bring foreigners in, the living in cities, accommodation from rural areas. So I think when we do it quite, we're not the greatest, but we do it quite well. We've got somebody assigned to look after the player once he comes to the club. Mm. Get him settled down, show him where the shopping center is, where the food is, this, what to buy, not to buy, and get him settled, you know? It's very important. You bring a guy from a rural area, even a South African boy, from an area that's come from Venda, and you put him in Joburg, yo, problems, boss. Problems. Problems. Girls, food,
everything,
accommodation, driving, cars, traffic, problem.
It's an interesting, you're touching on something interesting, which is management outside of the, you know, the 90-yard space, which is, we talk about this. You've actually, Rory, you had a show on it once where you got in Marks Maponyane about soccer players die poor in South Africa.
All of them, generally.
What's going on there? Like, I mean, as a coach, you sit there and you see it. Yeah,
in Europe, I tell you what they do. They take 30 or 40% of your salary, take it away, and it goes into a pension fund straight away.
Mm.
Yeah, in South Africa, they give you the 100% salary because they say, no, we this and we underprivileged. But excuse me? They're blowing the money. There should be a law in place that the league takes the money, the clubs take the money off. So you earn 50 rand. We take in 20 rand from you and you're living on 30. How you live, I don't care. Do you understand? Then you get the image right, the autographs right, the signing on fees. That money should be taken away or half given, you know, invested because of that situation. Now, you take a player from England. He's retired. He's still getting the pension every month. 10 years ago, he retired. He's still getting the pension every month. Small amount, but livable amount.
As a leader, do you think you should get emotionally intertwined in your players' lives?
Yes.
Do you do it or
yes
don't
and no.
you do
I
it?
Do, I do it in a casual basis without being... Because it's very difficult to some players, but I'll keep telling them about what I think they should be doing. Buying property. Investing their money. Buy smaller cars. If my players came on this, they'll tell the coach tells them that every day, buy property.
But I don't listen to him.
No, some of them have. There's a couple of some good stories as well, not all negative. Some good stories, guys who've had good careers, and when they stop playing now, they've got 4 or 5 properties, they can collect rent from them. They've invested in, they've bought small cars, not these big BMs, Mercedes, you resell value, you know, you've got nothing on them. Those type of things, you know. So all these type of things.
And how do you go about inspiring these guys beyond just yourself? So what methods do you use?
Well, I always try to interact with the player as best I can on a very casual social basis. Not going out and that, but on around the field. You know, we spend a lot of time together. You know, hotels, traveling, airports, buses. So you get talking to people. How's it going? How's your wife? How's your girlfriend? No, she's fine. You know, what's happening? You know, there's babies. What's going on? You're right. Yeah, you know, fine. School, blah, blah, blah. So you get a general drift of everybody, what's going on, you know? I mean, you've got to lead your own life.
You
don't want to give them that concentration camp style, but you just reiterate little points every now and again, and hopefully they listen.
And, you know, South Africa is in a mess, at least politically. And it's almost like... We're not seeing strong leadership, at least in the business space, in the political space, and that's why we're in the space that we're in. As a coach, if you had to take the principles that you apply and that you've learned on the soccer field, what do you think business leaders and political leaders aren't getting right that you think could make the difference?
Make the difference. That's a really wide board. I think if there's anything in South Africa why we're still quite stable is that the business leaders have kept the business growing, if that's the word. I'm talking about the big corporates. Where we, if I can relate it from a football perspective, I think it's about upskilling your staff. To try and say to them, if I talk to a player, so what are you going to do? No, I've got a little business gain. Okay, so try and upskill them. Try and develop them, try and he wants, okay, not everybody's going to be a coach. You might go into this side of the business. So try and upskill your staff, your coach, your players, or and try and get them thinking about the biggest problem we have in South Africa. Mm. My biggest concern, there's no tomorrow. Nobody worries about tomorrow.
Mm.
Across all walks of life, a water situation. No, the next world war in the world will be fought over water. Mm. Not religion, mm. not money, mm. not land.
Not oil.
Will be not oil, mm. will be fought over water. The water in this world is getting, it's getting hotter and hotter. The water is drying up. If no water, we don't live.
Mm.
Electricity, we can live without.
Mm.
We need water.
Mm.
Water is the biggest resource. And we don't appreciate it. We don't respect it. We don't look after it. We don't look for the future. And that's the biggest, that's just something on top mm. of my head.
So, for me,
the future in South Africa. South Africans, you look at South Africa now. You'll blow all his money today. Don't worry about tomorrow. You've got to be looking after tomorrow. And our children need to have better lives than their children and their children and their children. And that's important for me.
Gav, I've been stuck with this question in my own working professional life. And one of the questions that, or one of the statements that comes up is, when you have nothing, right, and then get given something which is amazing, like a salary,
get a bob card,
a football professional salary.
Yeah.
You're showing your age now, right? But I call it
a bob card. But that's
you get your truth. Card for the first time, right?
And you can go swipe and
exactly. And people say to you, people like yourself who've seen this go, dude, save your money. And like Gav, listen, you don't understand me, man. Like I came from rural KwaZulu-Natal, like. You want me to save? I've never had anything.
Most of the players are supporting the family and the family and the family.
How do you support that kind of person through their journey?
Well, everybody's got their own family story, and most of these boys are looking after their families,
mm.
which is a major concern because maybe they haven't looked after themselves. Right. You don't know the true story. I mean, everybody's got a capacity to earn a living,
mm.
and everybody's got a capacity to work. I would think, well, within reason. So why aren't they getting out there to looking for work? What is holding them back? I don't know. So that's a deeper conversation.
Yeah.
But players need to certainly look after the immediate family. That's for sure. You know, if they can.
You touched on a point where you said they buy the expensive cars. They're going.
And they live in a box.
They live in a box. Yeah.
No garage.
But one of the other things you touched on, which is the party life, right? And the way in which soccer players, specifically in this country, are seen as the party boys. You know, we've heard of a few soccer players over the years being accused of hectic sexual abuse and womanizing and treating women badly. And how much of that is a responsibility that a coach like you, we talk about well-rounded players.
Yeah, I've been involved with players who've been up for rape and that. Yeah, I've been involved.
How do you deal with that? I mean, how do you take away this kind of mentality of...
The first thing the club has got to do is take a neutral stance. Because some teams look after the player first. And say, no, we need to look after the player.
Mm.
It's understandable. But there needs to be what need to get to the bottom of the story before making an absolute verdict. Because... generally, what will happen is either the player gets kicked out, so they've taken the stance. Well, they need to take a neutral stance. They need to find out what's happened here, you know. So it's a very, very difficult situation. I mean, I don't blame the player. I'm not trying to take the players' blame away from the players, but they do get thrown on them. It does, of this, you know, the woman, I mean, you know, it's understandable because maybe a better lifestyle, whatever. So, but I don't... take the blame away from the players, you know what I'm saying? But it's a very, very difficult situation some of the players are under. There's no doubt about it.
Coach,
they go back into the areas, they're like gods there, you know?
Coach, let's talk about courage and the role of courage as a leader. You speak about coming into a club and, you know, almost enduring 5 losses because you believe in what you believe in. But I can imagine the board is on you at that time and so on. How important is courage? I mean, for you to take a Black Leopards, I imagine takes a lot of courage.
Huge courage.
How important is courage in leadership, and how do you then apply it?
Oh, courage is. There's a saying in I live by a saying: if the fear of losing is bigger than the fear of winning, then you've got a problem.
Mm.
So if you're scared of losing, and a lot of, we all are, every coach is, the day you lose that fear of losing is the day you must retire. Because then you know, you're going to do everything negatively. The whole week will be negative. So it's a very difficult thing to say, but you've got to be strong, beliefs and all those stuff. But you also got to be flexible and just say, hey, my beliefs aren't working here. Maybe we do need to tweak. And I said it at the beginning, that you need to tweak it a little bit. We need to change the direction here a little bit. So, but you cannot be scared of losing, you know, if it's bigger than the fear of winning. We're all scared. As I said, the day I lose my fear of losing, there's a problem. I'm always going to be scared to have that thought in the back of my mind. We don't want to lose, but I'm certainly more positive than I am negative, that's for sure. Even when I started.
It's four seasons now about at Bidvest Wits.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And this year, pre-season training did something slightly different. I saw all the soccer mags are talking about how Gavin Hunt has changed his preseason thing. He's gone to Cape Town and he's taken.
I've been to Cape Town for the last 5-8 years.
He's taken off his players.
Nonsense.
You see, this is the Gavin that I know. Remember this guy. Dean Furman didn't come.
Dean Furman's not with us. He's with SuperSport.
Sorry, not Dean Furman. Stephen Pienaar didn't come.
No, he came on Tuesday. He was coming from Europe. Yeah. So he came.
So he did.
He was there. I read the article. You know,
let's talk about it.
It's crazy. What's because people on? Say, your squad not very big. I say, well, I didn't bring everybody this year. I brought the ones I wanted work on. You know, there's one or two I left behind. Now we've changed our tactics. Changed everything. That was the conversation with the guy. That's how it went. I said, I just brought what I needed this year. I left one or two behind because normally. What I do is in preseason, I believe in games. Instead of running, let's play a lot of games, you know, so you get mileage. But anyway.
So, no, this is an important point because in business, communication obviously is important, not only internally. We've spoken a little bit about how you manage players, but externally as well. You know, you are the bid. For all intents and purposes, you're the business of business.
I think if there's one thing South Africa lacks in all the clubs, and some clubs are better than others, is a media manager.
Yeah. Media spokesperson.
What to say, what not to say. Because if you talk to me, I'm like talking to my mates in a media interview.
Press conference.
And I get myself into shit because I say the things I shouldn't say. Yeah. And I should be told, don't say that. And every club is the same story. You know, and you can make yourself look an absolute idiot because it comes out the next day, headlines. Change these tactics in the preseason. My boss phones me, what are you doing? I said, I don't know. What do you mean? I've been doing for the last 25 years, the same thing. Why are you changing? I said, well, I'm changing what? Your media thing. I said, I don't know. Sorry. Whatever. Sounds better. Maybe just make up a story.
But Gavin, I mean, there's a thing there about just authenticity. Because you're saying, you know, I wish there was somebody who could come and tell me what to say and what not to say. But how do you balance?
I'm not saying what's the fine line.
Yeah. But what's the fine line between just being yourself and...
I'll tell you why, because you get yourself fined.
Uh-huh.
I'll give you an example. Mm. And there's something that maybe the PSR listening or aren't listening.
they should
do better. You can't... The referee blows his whistle, prup, 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 and they stick a mic in your mouth straight away.
You're emotional, yeah.
You're absolutely... Something's... ticked you off a win or a loss. Something's pissed you off. Now you've got to talk with this, you know, opposition were fantastic today. We played really well. You know, we missed lots of chances and I'm proud of my players.
My goodness, it sounds like what you say every week after the game.
Because you just end up saying, I've got two speeches, one for a loss and one for the win.
What's your loss speech?
Well, the players played very hard today. They tried today.
I've always wanted to do this, by the way.
They tried very hard today. We missed lots of chances. You know, we could have won this game easily, you know, but we made crucial mistakes at crucial time. Then when you win, players were fantastic. The opposition really gave us a hard game today. You said the same shit back week in, week out. Because you're sticking a mic in someone's mouth 30 seconds after the whistle, instead of saying, right, 15 minutes after the game.
Cool down.
Let's watch a replay of the game with the goals against. I can watch it in the dressing room. Okay, that wasn't offside. Because now I'll go, oh, it was offside, the goal. It wasn't offside. Or it was a foul. It wasn't a foul. Or it was whatever. When England, they'll go, 15 minutes and then go watch the game, then you come. But obviously, I understand it's live television. They want to capture the moment. Mm. They want to capture that.
The emotion.
They want me to say something.
Yes,
wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the guy sitting there with that flipping hammer on the bang, you're guilty. Can't say that. And then you get fined. So you end up getting nothing. And you could have gotten much more, you know.
So Witz loses a game, and you've had that emotion, and you've just now spoken to a very retarded journalist about something, and you're emotional, and you go back into that dressing room. How are you still speaking there? Are you having a debrief, or do you just say bring it to Monday?
My debrief is the next day.
Okay.
I think it's wrong to have outbursts of emotion. I'm not saying it never happens. It happens. Mm. In passing, I'll say one or two things. But there's never a debriefing big on where you're keeping the players for 2 hours in the dressing room, you know, afterwards.
Just if you've joined us, sorry to interrupt you, Gavin. If you've joined us, we're speaking to Coach of the Year, Gavin Hunt, about leadership lessons from a winning coach. This guy has got more trophies and more awards than he probably even knows, because he's so humble he forgets them probably somewhere on a pitch somewhere long beyond. But it has been a fascinating conversation. Rory, you're a leader in your space. When you look at coaches, what's the thing that you're like, jeez, it must be difficult, eh?
Well, if you think about it, you could get fired. You know, I'm not under assessment every week. You know,
week.
It's not every every day. You know, it's not like the results of my work are being put out every single day to be judged.
I always say Monday to Friday. An old coach told me this: you maintain your job. Saturday, you keep your job.
Yes,
that's how we work.
Game day.
So Monday to Friday, maintain. Saturday, you try and keep your job. So
how does that impact life and planning and all of that? I mean, well, the one day you have a job, the next you don't.
Yeah, so it's very difficult, because, I mean, if you go to my house, the suitcase is right by the door, right there. And I leave it there on purpose. Yeah, yeah. So every day I walk past and say, not today, mate.
Yeah.
Or, I'm not packing today. So, I'm saying tongue in cheek, I'm saying it. But you can't go to work worrying about it. Because if you worry about it, you will fail. Mm. You need to be positive, and you have to be trying, you know. And obviously, you've got to know the people that you're working for. Mm. That's important.
Gavin, on that note, leading upwards. So it's one thing to lead people that look up to you, but leading upwards, trying to keep your bosses in check, because you probably know more about the game than they do sometimes. What is your strategy for leading your leaders towards a particular
goal? I always tell the people that I've worked for, I try and give them a picture before where they are and where we need to be and what we need to improve on. And I will tell them what's going to happen pretty much on the weekend. In a short prison form. Mm. Not a whole, you know. And then they all see a pattern emerging. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm. You know, and that's all you can do. If you've got an owner that knows a little bit about football, very dangerous. Mm. If you've got an owner that knows a lot about football, very dangerous. You want that guy in the middle there that knows quite a bit, and you know.
But who's the best owner that you've worked with?
And I'm not going to say this because I'm on live media, but I've worked for all good owners. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I worked for a real
Black Leopards.
It was tough. Mm. Tough. David is tough. Mm. But it made me tough.
David Tidiala.
And I thank him every day. He made me tough. He made me realize. He made me think about situations. To be fair to him, he gave me a chance. No one else came. There's this boy from Cape Town from the beach. Came to Venda in the red sand. There was no water. There's only red sand there.
Yeah.
40 degree heat working there. He's a white boy. He gave me a chance. Stuck with me. When I got there, I still said to him, we need a few players. He said, no, you're going to work with these players. I said, David. He said, no, you're working with these players. And he showed me a way that he's right. These players are from the area. They were committed. They were wanted it. We were very successful. Not winning trophies, but successful in where we ended and what we did.
How do you deal with conflict with the owner? How do you manage?
I'll agree with him.
You've got very you have very clear disagreements with this guy. You don't believe. What do you do?
I'll agree with him.
All the time?
All the time.
Why?
Because then to avoid the conversation just goes dead, doesn't it? So if you tell me, why isn't so-and-so playing? You're right. I should play.
And then you don't play him. Or you go ahead and you play him.
But Why get into an argument about a situation?
Mm.
About those type of things. I'm not saying I just go dead. Yes, I do. It's like when you fight with your wife. Yeah. Just agree with her.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Boom, finished.
What's the point?
How's
of,
that worked out for you?
Not very good. So I'm single. just boom.
Mm.
You're right, love. You're right. I will look into it. And that's it. No, I'm not saying. Mm. Because you're all a little bit hard-headed at times. But there's a fine line between when to push the boat and when to pull and then to just hold and, you know. But if you're explaining what you're trying to do to your owner, in a light conversation with a coffee pots and a coffee salt and peppers and we're going to push in here and go, and you give them a picture, they'll see the picture, you know.
Who's your leadership role model? Like the person that you look up to and you're like, you know what, if I can be half the leader this person was, I can move mountains.
Off the field, on the field?
Anywhere.
It's very difficult. I
you don't look up to anyone?
No, I don't actually. I've never looked up to anybody. I've never had a, oh, he's my icon.
So what informs your leadership philosophy then? What?
I don't know.
You just woke up and you're like, this is how it's going to be.
Wow. I've got no plan.
Mm.
No plan.
It's very interesting.
No, I don't say, listen, sounding like a real idiot here. I don't say there's
media,
no plan.
You need a media person to be telling you.
Yeah, yeah. There's a plan.
You should probably say there's a plan.
And I've worked with coaches and I've taken a lot from coaches and I've put it all together and, but at the end of the day, it's about you. You know what I mean. You know, and
So
I tell you what I've done in my career. I've said a lot of times I don't want to be like him.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to be like him.
So who do you not want to be like? That's the next question.
I don't mention those names.
Well, it's okay, give us qualities. What are the qualities that you look at?
Well, I think in a coaching perspective, I wouldn't want to. I think fantastic coach. I don't know the man from a bar of soap. But I wouldn't want to be like Jose Mourinho. Because I think it's, whenever there's, it's always something.
Mm.
When you should say, let me just go back and.
And fix.
And fix, you know what I'm saying? I've never met the man. And he's won more than I'll ever win in my life. And I'll never achieve the heights he's achieved.
So your problem is the excuses.
I can't handle that. Mm. That type of thing, you know. And they're always going from checkbook to checkbook.
Mm.
They're not solving.
The fundamental problem.
Where I have to go take a youth player and make him and then build him and sell him, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And I say, well, why hasn't he done that enough? Why hasn't he done that more?
Mm.
But as I mean, his record is
speaks for itself.
But when you're working in that level, they're looking after themselves, really, you know what I'm saying? You know?
Give us a sense of a week in the life of a coach such as yourself. What does the week, day by day,
well, my
from
phone
Monday?
Has been going right now. I'm looking at my phone. Yeah, my boss has been phoning me three times, so he's obviously signed a player or selling a player. So in football, it's not what you see at the training ground. It's a 24/7. Because it's always something. This player is this done this. We need to do this. And to be fair, the boss I work for, he's always working 6 months to it. 8 months in advance. So already we haven't kicked the ball for next year, but he's working January already, you know, which is the window or something like that already. So, and he'll, you know, I keep him on his toes and he keeps me on my toes because we always honored each other, but we need to do this. And he'll always come to me with players' contracts and durations and this type of thing. What I think, whatever he does, he does. But I always say, no, yes, I think, yes, no, you know, whatever, you know. And then, you know, so it's a good combination, me and my CEO. Yeah.
So take us through that Monday to Sunday. What's happening Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Training. I'm a great believer in, fail to prepare to fail. You know that old thing, that saying. So I'll put my yardage in. I'll put the mileage in. I'm a great believer in working on the training ground. I'm not a stickler for 2-3 hours. If you give me a good 45 minutes, you go home.
Really?
So what time does
training start?
9 o'clock. They could be home by top of 10.
Wow.
So with me, you put in, you'll go. You give me, I'll give you some sugar. You understand? I'll give you something. It's like a kid. It's like a dog. Dog does well. You pet the dog, you give the dog something.
Incentives, yeah.
You'll come back the next day.
Yeah.
So it's about incentivizing people.
And it's just one training session in the day?
Well, we do one training session. Then I'll do a lot of specialized training sessions.
Okay.
So the wingers, the strikers, the defenders, the midfield players.
Right.
That'll be separate sessions, you know. Then there's strength work. A lot of strength work. I believe in. We're one of the only clubs that does strength work. like gym work. You know, South Africans don't like to lift up weights.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah.
So we do strength work, and then obviously, yeah, closer to the game, then you're doing tactical, a lot of tactical. The tactical stuff starts on the Monday anyway. Mm. But I don't even tell them. I don't have time to explain to the players why we're doing things.
Take us to match day. As you wake up, what happens hour by hour?
Well, you don't
hour
sleep the night before. Uh-huh. That's generally
every
the case.
Match.
I've never lost that. I still don't sleep. I'll wake up many times. Mm. There's a couple of times in my career where I haven't known the team that I'm going to play until an hour before kickoff.
What do you mean?
I can't see it. There's mist, there's clouds, there's woods. Yeah, yeah. The trees are coming over. The wind is blowing. I can't see through. Then all of a sudden the sky opens and I can see it. Then it comes through at me. Do you understand?
Mm.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And you see it and my God, does it work. And you think of something left field, but you've practiced it in the week. Because I'm not going to do anything unprepared.
But you haven't practiced.
Yeah, no, we'll prepare. But there's a tweak, something, you know. I mean, I did it once in a big game. Played Chiefs or something. We had the 10, we had the 11 that's going to play. And something said to me, this player, I'm going to change him. I said, right, listen, son. I just had a feeling, I'm not playing you today. He said, I'm not playing you. Actually, come. The guy came in, scored 2 goals. I don't know.
And then the media starts, right?
Huh?
Gavin, you made a change really late on. What was that
great
about?
Great tactical change. I was fucking pulling my finger out of my backside. I was holding the wind like that to see if I could, you know.
So now the match is approaching. So you're still cloud. Then what do you do? What happens?
Well,
before?
then I say,
do you guys meet? What?
Yeah, we have a team meeting. Mm. We'll go through the briefing. And as I said, the team meet are not long, and then we'll do a little bit about the opposition, like most teams do, this, and this, and that, and off we go, you know?
Mm.
So, yeah. It's not about this big banging heads and hoorah, rah, and clapping hands. No. I don't believe in all
what's
that.
Your, what's your favorite song as you're about to get into the pitch? You know, the one that gets the guys
they sing,
going?
They sing the songs that every team seems to sing the same song that I've been with.
What song is that? Sing it.
I can't even think now. You got me going in now. My mind is all over the show. Oh, I can't think of this.
We've had Gavin for a long time. You
remember that?
Yeah. You remember? Yeah. Actually,
I've got you at 4.
Gavin, stop complaining. Your coach tells you stop complaining. Get on with the game.
Yeah, you're right. 100%. Sorry, boss.
Agree with the boss.
Agree with the boss. The boss is always right. He's never wrong.
Tell me, you look to the future, and we spoke a little bit about where soccer's going, and, you know, there's some things that are you avoid, and there's some things that you... You know, this technology advances. Tell me, what is useful to you from the days where you started and we didn't have the screens, the video, the playbacks, all the technology that they now come at you, the heart rate monitors on the players and all that stuff. What's useful for you in terms of technology that's helping you become a better coach, if anything?
Fast forward and rewind.
Is it as simple as that? How many times are you watching a game afterwards?
Stop it. Rewind, fast forward.
This guy's old school, man.
That's it.
This guy's old school.
And he still wins leagues, bro.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. You cannot beat the naked eye watching a live game. So for me, watch the live game. So I watched them the week before, live. Because on a TV screen or on a DVD or on a monitor, you don't get the distance control. Now, football's all about distances, from the back of the team to the front of the team. If that distance gets too big, they're normally a poor team. If it doesn't get too small, they're normally a poor team. If they keep the distances equal through the 90 minutes, then they're a well-drilled team, if you want to call it.
Mm.
So that's something. If they keep their distances laterally and from side to side, then they're, you know, all... So those things, yeah, you can pick it up on the TV screen, on your Instat scouts and all these type of things. But for me, the naked eye is always very important.
What a fascinating conversation, Andrew. Leadership lessons from a winning coach. And it sounds like instinct is a very important
intuition.
Ingredient and intuition in all of this. So all
not
of,
always
all
right.
Throughout, and the courage and the willingness to possibly fail, but sticking to your convictions. So we've spoken about being an example as a leader. We've spoken about your ability to articulate a future, even to people who don't speak the same language as you. We've spoken about your affirming players. There's some players that need to be kicked in the butt. There's some players that need to be mollycoddled. You've spoken about having a difficult conversation and even being authentic. As a final thought, Gavin, there's a saying that blessed are those who dream dreams and are willing to pay the price to make them come true. Mm. Said your dream is to take a team to the World Cup. Mm. What price are you willing to pay for that?
Anything.
What are you doing about that right now?
Keep myself in the market.
Keep a job. Yeah.
You know, it's about keeping a job, about keeping yourself in the market, about keeping yourself in the face of people who make those decisions.
Mm.
What else can you do? There's nothing else, you know. Longevity, which is key for me. I mean, you'll see my record is always, I'm not a
hop around,
a job hopper. Mm. I've been sustainable, only one job, possibly Leopards, where I was a year. But everywhere else has been five, six years, you know. Club, I played for 14 years as a player. You know, all those type of things. Don't keep girlfriends too long, but that's a problem. You know?
That's a separate show.
Yeah, maybe I'm the denominator.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Gavin, it has been an absolute delight, thanks, man. You're as humble as anything. I've always enjoyed interviewing you when it was critical and you gave me all that, don't talk that rubbish to me. And to just hang out with you, man. It's been an absolute pleasure and a gift, actually, to hang out with such a radical guy.
Thanks for having me. Great.
Rory, it's just salt of the earth is coming to mind here.
Yeah, well, just as the Matsansa of Pitori would say,
what would they say now?
Vejo.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. If you missed anything on the podcast, check it out, cliffcentral.com/frankly speaking. It is Leadership Lessons from Gavin Hunt. Have yourself a fantastic day. Ciao, ciao.
This is cliffcentral.com.